Hello everyone, it's Mark Goodacre. Welcome to the NT Pod, the podcast all about the New Testament and Christian origins. It's episode 117, and today we're asking, how could Paul have been a Pharisee? It's one of those things that is really easy to forget, that Paul makes quite clear that in his former life, in his past, he identified as a Pharisee. And that's really striking to us, because when we hear that term Pharisee in contemporary culture, we often think of it as a negative thing. And New Testament scholars have to do so much work, not just New Testament scholars, but scholars of early Judaism and so on, have to do so much work to try and get us to rethink our cultural assumptions about that word Pharisee. Where does Paul say it? He says it in Philippians 3. It's one of those undoubtedly authentic epistles of Paul, one of the seven that people all think, or most people think, are written by Paul. And in Philippians 3, 4 to 6, he writes, "If anyone has reason to be confident in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day, a member of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew born of Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a persecutor of the church, as to righteousness under the law, blameless." Now, it's a difficult passage to come to terms with because we have those cultural assumptions about what a Pharisee is. If I were to say to you, "You're a Pharisee," in everyday conversation, it would probably be taken as an insult, not as a compliment. No one ever goes, "Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, I am a bit of a Pharisee, actually." I mean, it has connotations of hypocrisy. It has connotations of legalism, petty-mindedness, self-righteousness. It has all of these kind of connotations. And those connotations, I think, are so deeply embedded in our culture that it's even affected biblical translation. I had, for many years, a New International Version of the Bible. And the New International Version of the Bible translated that key element there in Philippians 3 as for legalistic righteousness, faultless. I mean, the translation really should be something like righteousness according to the law, righteous under the law. But they made it legalistic righteousness. That word legalism actually finds its way into the text of the New Testament. The New International Version eventually repented of that decision, and in 2011 they changed it. I only found that out because I went looking for it today online, and I thought, "Oh, I'm sure the NIV used to say legalistic righteousness," and it turns out that they changed it in 2011. But it's not just legalism that we think of when we use that word Pharisee in contemporary English. It's also hypocrisy, pretending to be one thing when actually you're something else. I remember a lovely story that the New Testament scholar, now no longer with us, Dieter Luhrmann, once told, all about how you can actually buy a drink called a Pharisee in Germany. And a Pharisee, do you know what it is? It's basically a cup of coffee that's got some rum cheekily snuck into it, and then some whipping cream on the top. The whipping cream sort of hides the smell of the rum, and it appears to be one thing. Well, it's actually something else. I mean, it's terrible. It's terrible that it's got a name like that. I mean, it gives us so much more work to do when we're actually looking at historical Pharisees. There's several stories of the origin of this name for the drink. One of them involves a pastor, a certain Peter George Johansson, who was celebrating the baptism of his seventh child in 1872. And among the guests, there was a certain Reverend Blair, who had strictly forbidden that anyone in his fold should imbibe alcohol. But Johansson felt that you can't have a baptism ceremony without having some booze. So he came up with the idea of mixing rum with sugar, putting it in the hot coffee, and then adding the whipped cream on top. The Reverend was apparently tricked for a while until he accidentally got hold of one of these drinks, and he said, exclaimed, you Pharisee, when he realizes what has happened. But the drink is pretending to be one thing while it's something else. But it's not true that we should be thinking about Pharisees in these terms. I mean, it is true that they are depicted in this way frequently in the Gospels. I mean, Matthew 23, you have this whole indictment, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, and there's that word. And like, and you have there things that have been taken as, like, they pay attention to the minute things of the law, but overlook the bigger things. You have that amazing line, you tithe mint and dill and cumin, but you overlook the weightier commands of the law, justice, mercy, and truth. And incidentally, people always forget that Jesus says, you should be doing the one, but without neglecting the other. But anyway, so those charges of hypocrisy are there. And Pharisees themselves are frequently depicted as baddies in the Gospels. I mean, think of Luke 7, 36 to 50, the story of the anointing of Jesus by a woman who's called a sinner. That's in the house of Simon the Pharisee, who doesn't behave in an honorable fashion. Luke 16 has Pharisees called lovers of money. So it's really easy to lean into this anti-Semitic trope of Pharisees as being like baddies, evil, hypocritical, nasty kind of people. Sometimes in the film and fiction, you see Pharisees depicted in this particular way. But what I want to do, I want to contrast the way that we often think of Pharisees with the way that Paul thinks of the term. Paul does not have any hint of seeing the term Pharisee as having those negative connotations for him. When he says that he was a Pharisee, he expects you to be impressed with that. Even though, of course, he goes on to say that, you know, he has put all that old life behind him. Nevertheless, it's still there that he thinks it's something basically good, just like being of the tribe of Benjamin, just like being a Hebrew of Hebrews are good things in Paul's book. The reason why we can take Paul at his word for Pharisees being seen by many of the populace as being great people is that we see the same thing in other sources, in particular the Jewish historian Josephus, who depicts the Pharisees as being the good guys. He really likes talking about the Pharisees. And it's worth noting that one of those gospel authors that has those negative comments about Pharisees, Luke, is able to depict Paul's Pharisaism as a kind of positive in his second volume, The Acts of the Apostles. You can actually read between the lines, I think, and realize that in the Gospels and Acts of the Apostles, they can, in fact, be goodies. Gamaliel is a positive character in Acts 5:34, where we get this line, a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a teacher of the Lord, who was honored by all the people. So it turns out there are good Pharisees, even in Luke's book. And Gamaliel comes back again in Acts of the Apostles. He comes back in Paul's speech in Acts 22. He says in 22:3, I'm a Jew born in Tarsus in Cilicia, but brought up in the city at the feet of Gamaliel, educated strictly according to our ancestral law, being zealous for God, just as all of you are today. It's actually remarkably similar, what you get there in Acts 22, to what Paul himself says in Philippians 3. It's just that Luke has those extra biographical details, born in Tarsus, studying at the feet of Gamaliel. But the rough similarities are very clearly there. So in Acts, Paul is linked with this famous honored Pharisee Gamaliel. And then Paul himself twice in speeches in Acts of the Apostles identifies himself as a Pharisee. In 23:6 he does it. And then in 26:5 he says, they have known for a long time, if they're willing to testify, that I have belonged to the strictest sect of our religion and lived as a Pharisee. What does it mean to think about Paul as a Pharisee? I think one thing that I do want to make clear is I'm not denying that there are really negative depictions of Pharisees in the Synoptic Gospels, and to some extent John. John does have a sympathetic Pharisee named Nicodemus in John 3, and then he appears again twice later in the Gospel. So I'm not denying that at all. That stuff's there, and it's really interesting to reflect on what it's doing there, and that's definitely an interesting discussion for another day. It'd be a great one for a podcast on the Gospels, for example. I'll bookmark that as something that I'd like to talk about on another occasion. But what does Paul's Pharisaism tell us about his biography? One really interesting thing emerges actually from those passages in Acts, because the Gospel writers in Acts do make clear that Pharisees believe in resurrection from the dead. And we know that this is true from other sources, including Josephus, where Pharisees are contrasted with Sadducees. Sadducees don't believe in resurrection from the dead, whereas Pharisees do. So if Paul, as a Pharisee, already had that marked belief in resurrection from the dead, it means that at the moment when he receives his call or his conversion to this new movement in Jesus, he's actually not changing one of his core doctrines, he's adapting it. So Paul already believes in resurrection from the dead as a Pharisee, but he's able to put a particular configuration on it, a very, very particular configuration, Jesus. And what Paul says in places like 1 Corinthians 15 is that there is a general resurrection from the dead, and Jesus is the first fruits of it. The interesting thing is, it's like Paul is even more sure now about the general resurrection of the dead, from the dead, because of Jesus' resurrection. He has taken that key doctrine and he is, for want of a better term, Christianized it. Paul is such a fascinating figure. He really rewards more and different areas of research and study. And one thing I think I just want to keep coming back to all the time is exploring what it means to think about Paul's past, to think about what he describes, according to some translations, as his former life in Judaism in Galatians 1. Well, thank you so much for listening to this latest episode of the NT Pod. It's always good to have your company. You can find me on the web at podacre.blogspot.com, or you can watch this on my YouTube channel at Podacre. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to seeing you again. Bye-bye.